for the discount rate issue, and we have till 12:15, I think, with any luck. This is paper 14.
Morning. Agenda paper 14 is about the determination of the discount rate for post-employment obligation. Agenda paper 14A is a letter that we received a few days ago on this topic. According to paragraph 83 of ICE 19, the discount rate should be determined by reference to market yields on high-quality corporate bonds. A common approach used in practice is to consider high-quality corporate bonds only the bonds that receive one of the two highest ratings given by a rating agency. In the paper, we call this bond AA bonds. The issue is whether corporate bonds with a rating lower than AA can be considered to be high-quality corporate bonds. We note that ICE 19 does not specify what grade of bonds should be considered as high quality. In our view, entities should apply their judgment in determining the minimum rating that can be considered to be high quality and should comply with the guidance provided in paragraph 84 and 85 of ICE 19. We summarize this guidance in paragraph 20 of the paper. We also think that according to paragraph 122 of ICE 1, an entity should disclose the judgments made in determining the discount rate, if the decision about the discount rate has a material effect on the financial statements. We perform an outreach on this topic with the ISB Employment Benefits Working Group, the International Actuarial Association, National Standard Setters and Regulators. On the basis of our outreach, we think that the issue is widespread and then there is divergence in practice. However, in our view, this diversity is mainly due to other factors, such as the database used and the extrapolation techniques used. We recommend that the committee should not add this issue to its agenda, because the question is about application of judgment rather than interpretation of the standard. Consequently, we think that the committee will not reach a consensus on this issue on a timely basis. We discussed this issue with a group of European preparers and they agree with our proposal. We are asking the committee if they agree with our recommendations and if they comment on our proposed tentative agenda decisions. Thanks.
Reactions?
Hiro. Well, maybe first of all, I can understand that preparers agree with your tentative agenda decision. No other comment to that. Would have been surprised if there wouldn't have been. But I totally agree with you that there is diversity in practice out there, even though the prevalent practice out there is to use, as it's said in the paper, AA as high-quality corporate bonds. So we have seen calculations done by actuaries that the difference of up to 100 basis points already. My concern is, and I agree with the staff, by the way, saying that the standard doesn't tell you it's AA. I agree with that. But my concern is that people are telling us there's diversity in practice out there in understanding how to interpret what high-quality corporate bonds really means. And I think one of the questions that the submitter asked is, there are different views. Is it a risk-free rate or isn't it a risk-free rate? And we don't give an answer to that. My concern is with what we're saying here, diversity will increase because I could see companies with this guidance or this, well, it's not a guidance, it's just an agenda decision, saying, well, okay, it could be triple A, it could be triple B, could be double B. And simply by saying, yes, but you have to disclose what you have done in under 122, doesn't really help the readers of the financial statements, because just by saying we think that high-quality corporate bond is triple B, doesn't help you a lot because you don't have then the numbers. What would my pension liability look like if I would use double A or single A? So again, I agree with you. It doesn't say double A, but at the end of the road, I think that we should at least try to give some more guidance on how you specify and calculate what high quality corporate bonds is. And if we cannot do that, which might be the case, then I would like to get at least more disclosure on this. Otherwise, I mean, this is really a very important issue. It has a huge impact. You know, talking about 100 basis points or even more on billions on pension, more on billions of pension liabilities, and we are just saying, well, you just look into 122 of IS1, and then you can see that they have used double B or triple B. Doesn't really help. So I think we should try to give a little bit more guidance, and if we say we cannot do that, as much as I hate it to increase disclosures, I think we need to give more guidance here on the disclosures, not simply saying we'll look into 122.
Okay, I have John, Lawrence, Luca, Scott, Charlotte, Andrew. Oh, and Fabian. John?
Yeah, in reading through the paper, as preparer, I had a big smile, and I was very happy because I was seeing that our liability would reduce by a couple of billion dollars. No joke. That's as significant as it is. It is the most significant change that we're bringing here. So, I don't think the mandate is to bring diversity of practice. So, I think this will create that. Or if it doesn't, I believe that it will bring companies towards the low end of the what this might be. I recognize that we have an issue because IFRS does not define what's high quality. I would argue it's investment grade. An investment grade is meant to be high quality for purposes of investment by pension fund, for example.
Triple B.
And that's huge difference. It will be a lot of pressure, even on internal, you know, preparers like us, by senior management. The focus of senior management is on that, because the liability is raising so much with this low interest rate environment that we have pressure from our board of directors to revisit that rate and to find ways to increase the rate. Having said so, I understand the analysis is right. I mean, it's not defined, but at the same time, it is not my understanding that there is diversity in practice. Maybe it's because of my environment. I think the prevailing view is today that it's double A corporate bonds and higher, maybe because of the SEC's guidance on that. But honestly, either we say it's single A, or it's investment grade, or it's double A, or I know we don't like rules, but at the same time, I think we need rules here.
Marantz?
I echo the comment being made that it's a hot topic, and whenever you talk about it, we're talking here billions. So it's highly significant. Also, up until now, there wasn't so much diversity in the population that was used in determining the discount rate, and effectively building on this SEC guidance dating 1993, so double A rated. But diversity will be emerging for sure for the year end with what is being proposed. So someone has to catch the hot potato, because markets, regulators, outsiders will criticize such an amount of diversity you're going to get. Because even if, so with this, it's the door open to, as you say, determine the way you, the discount rate, the way you want to determine the discount rate, and we're likely going to see in Europe discount rates using up to BBB population, investment grade population. I don't know how this is going to work for the European filers with the SEC, whether the SEC would accept such a determination, so we'll have diversity anyway. And what can we do? If I'm an auditor, I have to sign off. Am I going to say these are not high-quality corporate bonds? I have no basis because I don't know what these high-quality corporate bonds. You were to ask me today to say what high-quality corporate bonds, if there weren't that statement from the SEC dating 1993, I would be really embarrassed. Plus, I had information that effectively what was considered high-quality corporate bonds maybe in 1993 may have changed, evolved over time up until today. So I don't know what is high-quality corporate bonds. So then my reaction is, so far, companies, many companies, have made the judgment that high-quality corporate bonds is best represented by AA-rated bonds. They want to change. What is acceptable in terms of supporting documentation for justifying the change? We know that the population of AA-rated bonds has reduced, but it does not... You still have some. It has reduced, but you still have some. So do you consider that the fact that it has reduced is sufficient an argument to justify that you change and open up compared to your prior practices? So that's a question I have.
We need to move this along.
Tempus fugit.
Yeah.
Luca?
Comments. The first one is that not necessary, it is a choice. Sometimes you are forced to change. Because I agree that in general you have a look to AA as the high quality bonds to use. But if you look at the last couple of years, the iBox is reduced dramatically the number of bonds that are included inside. I think that nowadays there are with you. Euro currency with a duration of more than 10 years, I think that there are less than 10. And so the amount of your reference is not so big enough sometimes in order to produce your real calculation, because sometimes you will not have for a very long maturity, for instance, for 20 years, a high quality bonds of AA to be used in your calculation. So I think that some entities could be forced, especially if they because they are not able to obtain information on AA from the market, because there are a lot of reduction of the bulk of items that have this kind of rating. And in general, also the reference that has been, that is presented in AIS 19 regarding the use of government bond probably has been produced in a historic period in which government bond is more similar to a free risk rate. And nowadays we are exactly in the opposite situation. So
green government bond,
yes.
Discount rate skyrockets.
Okay, 25%.
Right.
Okay. I'm in line with the standards, but I'm using something with more than two digits.
Yeah.
So. No. So I think that we have to, the recommendation from the staff, I think that is what can be done now. And but we have to start thinking about the idea to refer to the board in order to start considering the new situation, economic situation, in order to review these elements that is absolutely relevant and absolutely with real impact on your figures. The other element that I would like to underline is that in the document that Michael circulated regarding the ESMA, the 12th of November, the ESMA said that he knew that this topic is under review by IFRIC, but at the same time say the idea of the staff is correct. So the ESMA emphasized that there is a particular need for transparency in this area, therefore entities are expected to disclose if they use the yields coming from high-quality corporate bonds or other means, a description of how they determine the yields from high-quality corporate bonds, including any significant judgment use, and then in reference to a regional market to which the user has access. So in other terms, the ESMA has took the occasion to say that in any case, whatever will be the discussion and the decision of this committee, in any case, they expect to have this kind of information in the next financial statements.
Scott?
So this issue was somewhat troubling to me because of what seems to have generated it. Everybody used to be comfortable using AA until there weren't enough AA. The standard says what to do if there's not enough high quality. It says go to government yields. I agree with Luca's concern that sometimes government yields might not be doing what we want them to do in this case. But, you know, the standard actually does tell you what to do if there aren't a lot of high quality, and it's not redefined high quality. I also note that IAS 8 says you can only change an accounting policy if it results in the financial statements providing reliable and more relevant information. If a company changes its definition of high quality from AA to A, how are they going to make that assertion that it produces more relevant information when the principle of IAS 19 is that the rate is not supposed to reflect actuarial or investment risk? I mean, it seems to me that the definitions that are included in the paper from Standard & Poor's of AA and A, it seems pretty clear that A has investment risk in it. So while I agree conceptually with what's proposed, that yes, the standard doesn't say what high quality it is, and therefore you got to use judgment. We seem to have evidence that people are pushing towards using judgments that, at least to me, don't seem consistent with the objective stated in IAS 19. And we ought to try to convey to them that you ought not use such judgments if they result in you using a rate that incorporates actuarial or investment risk.
Okay, I'm starting to lose track. I'm going to cut this off precisely at 12:15 because we have a short lunch break and we can't run into the time that we've dedicated to the trustees. So we may have to pick this up either later this afternoon or next meeting in any event. I hesitate to push it to next meeting because this is sensitive for people for year-end filings.
Yes.
So let's keep the comments short. Charlotte?
The only comment I had is at the moment, the situation at the moment just doesn't seem to be workable, where some entities or preparers are forced to use AA simply because there is guidance from other authorities, whether it's the SEC or the ASB here, and that something ought to be in the standard to say what we should do, whether it's more guidance as to what high quality is, whether it's a set bond, whatever. I just think it needs to be done by the ISB rather than the SEC.
John? Okay. Fabian?
Oops. Okay. The feedback I got actually is along the lines, obviously, of what's been expressed already by the committee members. Maybe the most important feedback I got is that a rejection, even notice even in a draft form, is sort of dangerous for enforcers because it opens up the I mean, it gives way to a lot of diversity, and this is really difficult to enforce. So it's a real difficulty for enforcers. I guess what bright lines are difficult to set up. So it's more a type of methodology that would be useful to get to a reduced to reduce diversity. So if the members could come up with guidelines so as to how to determine the discount rate, that would be helpful, even if not achieved by the end of this year. The one of the points in paragraph 78 is the exclusion, and Scott touched on that, the exclusion of the investment risk. And one of the question or diversity in interpretation we hear is that investment risk could be seen as a default, a risk of default, rather than credit risk itself. So maybe trying to articulate better what investment risk is compared to credit risk could be a way forward.
Okay, I think Fei Long, you're next.
I understand there are significant diversities in practice, but I'm struggling about finding a solution for that. If we are in the direction of the recommendation of the staff, we have faced that the issue that what kind of ratings, minimum rating, in what kind of ratings, and which rating agents could be recognized, because in different jurisdictions they may have different rating agencies, and even for the biggest two agents like Standard & Poor's and Moody's, they have different criteria, different rating system. So they may change their criteria. Should we rely on just fix one or two ratings, or just come out a general concept for the ratings?
John?
I mean, I agree with staff that it's a matter of judgment, and IS-19 doesn't tell you what high quality is, but maybe if we are going to put out a rejection notice, we should actually say what it is not, in terms of, rather than trying to define what high quality is, what are the things that we think would not be high quality and would be inconsistent with the notion of high quality. Just to put out that the standard doesn't define high quality and refer to paragraph 84 and 85 doesn't really help preparers assess it and make the judgment. I think a rejection notice would also have to address how do you change your notion of what's high quality over time. And Scott referred to a change in policy. I mean, people don't necessarily believe it's a change in policy. Some people believe it's a change in estimate. And therefore, you don't need to have it be more relevant. So I think if we're going to do anything, we need to be far more fulsome in discussing some of these issues in a rejection notice.
Guido, I've got burned on the list too. We may, as I said, I'm going to cut it off precisely, and then we'll bring it back after we meet with the trustees. Guido?
It's John just said the question is whether it's a change in estimate or change in accounting policy, but even if it would, and I think it's a change in estimate, because it's just we are still at high quality corporate bonds, and nobody can tell me that AA is a high-quality corporate bonds. I mean, looking at the wording of Standard & Poor's, you might read into that for A, there is investment risk, for AA, there isn't. We'd like to see the wording of the other companies, so Moody's or whatever. So that doesn't really help us. I don't think that it gives us guidance. Maybe just one more point. I could always, and I think it's a good argument, say if I switch to A, away from AA. I have more companies to look at, and hence my estimate or my calculation is more reliable. Because the less companies you have on the long term, more than 10 years corporate bonds, the more estimates you have to do. So from my point of view, I could say it's more reliable to give the information for single A. And again, I think we have only two options. Maybe for the sake of time, I don't know whether we could pursue this way, but say, well, okay, if you change or whatever you use, but you need to disclose more than what is in 122, or at least give some guidance in the rejection wording. I think we will not come up with a conclusion before year end by saying, oh, it's single A, it's triple B, it's investment grade. Or how do you define investment risk? And I agree that that might be a way to go. That's why I said at the beginning, the submitter asked the question, is it meant to be risk-free or is it something else? I don't think that we can resolve this issue. So maybe in the meantime, my proposal would be to say, well, it's not clear, but if you are changing or whatever you're doing, the disclosure has to be more than just saying, well, I use triple B or single A, and this is this is the amount that came out of it. I mean.
Ernst?
Well, when I look at the relevant paragraphs 83 and so forth, I think they were written in a different market environment where we are now. So they, when the ISB wrote that, they had something else in mind than we have now. For example, if you look at the case of corporate bonds, or if you don't have high quality government bonds, if you don't have high quality corporate bonds, look at government bonds, and Luca already pointed that out. And I think in 84, second sentence, it clearly says that discount rate reflects the time value of money and nothing else, and that's the risk-free rate to me. So that's nothing else but the risk-free rate.
Sorry, that's not true.
Well.
Okay, and then we'll cut it off.
The standards use time value of money in very different ways. So if you look at the new REFREC, time value of money includes the default rate. If you look into IAS 36, it excludes default rate. If you look into the new insurance standard, it includes liquidity risk. So time value of money does not per se mean it's risk-free.
Yeah, but I would have liked in this context, I would read it as risk-free.
Then I would have taken AAA and not AA.
And I think you should not look at individual ratings anyway, because I don't trust the rating agencies, you know. I guess Lehman.
What reason would you have for that?
You know, if you look at AA, and Lehman was AA a week before they defaulted. So, you know, we shouldn't focus on.
Yeah, but after they defaulted.
They were D, right. But we shouldn't look at specific ratings. And that's why I'd say we should put out some guidance towards use your judgment, but it's rather the risk-free end than the more risky end, which is not very helpful.
But don't
use double A, because I don't trust them.
He doesn't trust auditors. He doesn't trust rating agencies. Okay. We're going to break now. Come back promptly at 1. We will revisit this if necessary, to the exclusion of anything else.
Okay, so public session's at 2 o'clock.
Public session starts at 2 o'clock. Public session. Okay, let's wind up the rubber bands and see if we can get through the rest of the day here. When we broke for lunch, we were talking about the pension discount rate, and I think we had all weighed in, and I heard a couple of messages in that I'd like to summarize and propose a course to a committee. Message number one was the tentative agenda decision as drafted would not effectively limit practice, that we would still see the diversity, or even worse, a race to the bottom. And that's not a desirable outcome. So we would need to work on that anyway. Observation number two, anything we did today, even if we knew exactly what the answer was, which we don't, wouldn't be available for year end anyway. Because we'd have to expose it for 2 months, bring it down back to what would then be the March meeting, and so it would have limited value. Number three, I think we did identify two or three key concepts that need our attention. The significant one being in the nature of investment risk, and exactly what that means in the context of deciding whether or not you have a high-quality corporate bond, because the standard is clear that they wanted a source of a discount rate that was free of what they called investment risk. So we need to focus on that. So what I'm proposing is, on that basis, we just carry this issue forward and take the time we need to do it right, rather than trying to rush to an answer. I would love to just say, it's double A, get on with it. But I don't sense that this committee would be ready to do that. So, Guido?
Well, I understand where you are coming from, and I agree with you that that's probably a project that we or the board has to look at in the future, so we can't come up with clear solution for year end 2012. I agree with you. But doing nothing and not providing any guidance or clarification, I think as ESMA has said, they are looking for clarification from the committee. And I would also think that ESMA and the other regulators would look at a tentative agenda decision, which would not solve the problem finally, but which would give some, at least some guidance on the direction or what we are looking at, would help. So my proposal would be to include something in the wording of the tentative agenda decision along the lines that we say, we think it's a change in accounting estimate and you have to provide the disclosures for a change in accounting estimate. My understanding is that the disclosures in IS-8 require you to provide something like a double calculation, which is, this is what the pension liability would have looked like under the old estimate, and this is how it looks like now. That would give some information to users and investors. So that would be one thing. And the other one, with regard to the investment risk or credit default risk, something along the lines like, okay, the IS-19 is telling you you should use high-quality corporate bonds. So based on this, the committee would not expect that this new estimate would deviate too much in respect of the investment risk or default risk that you take into consideration when you choose your universe of corporate bonds that are high-quality corporate bonds. So I think that that would, I know it doesn't solve the problem, but it would at least give some guidance and some useful information to users and also prepare us. And I would think that maybe Fabienne can help us out on here, because ESMA is waiting for clarification. I would agree with you if ESMA would say, well, that's a tentative agenda decision, we don't care about it. But I think that would be also useful to the enforcers.
I guess I only have two reservations with that. Your points are well taken, except I don't think it's a change in estimate. I think it's a change. So the method that you use to select a discount rate is a policy, in my mind.
No, you would still, I mean, we could debate that, but I firmly think it's a change in estimate.
Well,
because you are still using high-quality corporate bonds.
And my point is, we haven't had the opportunity or even a basis to have the debate.
Well, maybe we could ask around the table where the views are. If there are split views, I agree with you, then. But the reason why I'm a little bit concerned is about this. This is a real, as we have heard before, and ESMA, everybody's involved here. This is a real issue. And if we say, let's wait without giving any guidance up until next year, it will be a disaster. we are talking about billions here.
What were you saying for the second point? I got the first bit on.
The first one was the disclosure on ISH, if it's a change in accounting estimate. And the other one is that we say something along the lines and where you have to look at high quality corporate bonds. So when you do your new estimate, we would not expect that the credit risk or investment risk that you take into consideration when you build your universe of corporate bonds that you use to do the calculation would deviate too much from what you did before. So if it's double A now, I would not say that use single A, single B, triple B would have problems with that. Go to single A, you could still say, okay, the difference is not too high. I agree that this is, maybe at the end of the day, we will come up with a different conclusion, but for the time being, that would give some guidance out there and would help keeping the financial statements comparable at least to a certain degree.
Can I suggest an alternative? I understand the desire to do something. What if we drafted a rejection notice that pointed people to the language of the standard and the basis, and that said, you know, the desire is to have a rate that does not incorporate actuarial or investment risks, and that investment risk is not just default risk. It's also market risk. It's also spread risk. And do that, so we would just be pointing people to the language of the standard.
I think that's really, the standard is out there, and there is, nevertheless, there's diversity in practice, because if you look into the basis of, that would not help from my point of view, because if you look at the basis of conclusions, some people say investment risk is general investment risk, so there should be no investment risk at all, but the standard says the investment risk should not be included. So a lot of people think what this means is the investment risk of the plan assets that you invested in. Yeah.
That's clearly not what the standard says, but
I'm just saying.
Guido, I'm afraid this conversation is proving my point. Trying to issue something on the fly like this is going to be, in my mind, a bad idea. Andrew?
Well, I'm not sure it is a bad idea. I quite like Guido's idea. I mean, first of all, I think it's clear it's a change in estimate. Secondly, yes, it will only be a tentative agenda decision, but it will give some directions to our thinking. I mean, if we said there are some issues to sort out here, you know, we'll take time to sort them out, but in the meantime, if you change your estimate, these are the disclosure requirements, that sort of thing, I think at least that is helpful, because otherwise, if we say nothing, I think it'll be a free-for-all this year. And the timing of bringing it to this committee is unfortunate, but I'm just concerned it will be a free-for-all unless we say something, give some direction.
Fabian?
From an SMS perspective, my understanding, reading the common priorities for 2012 that Luca was referring to earlier. At the moment, ESMA recommends that the entities should not change their approach to determining discount rates. So I guess that's a signal for your end not to change anything. So I'm not so concerned about your end than reaching something in the near future, even if not for 2012 accounts. So I think ESMA would really like not to see anything out that would be too quick and too.
So you'd rather that we take the time?
Yes, okay. Definitely.
Luca and then Laurence, I thought this was going to be a quickie. I'm sorry.
Just to come back to the Guido proposal, just to understand. Are you thinking to integrate the present agenda decision, saying that you have to express the judgment that adopted, and if you have made the change, indicate the effect of this accounting estimates, or focus only to the change in accounting estimates? Both. Okay.
Sean, John Lawrence.
As MIM may have issued clarification about what they expect at 31 December, but there is a world of other IFRS jurisdictions where what ESMA say doesn't really have any implications. So I do think that we need to do something for pre 31 December. Otherwise, we just get a free for all.
And what would something be in your mind?
Well, I think Guido's proposal, I'd be supportive of it. At least provides some guidance for what we expect to see if people are going to change the way they approach what is a high quality, what are high quality bonds.
John?
Yes, I have a different view from John. It seemed to me that the pressure comes from Europe more so than elsewhere, although I don't have a vision from everywhere else. But if in Europe it's a bit frozen for the time being, I don't think that, at least in North America, there would be pressure unless that comes out this way, saying basically you can revise your judgment. So the status quo, I believe, I think would mostly work if ESMA deals with Europe. So my preference would be that instead of rushing and getting in the wall, that if we take the time to reflect on that and come with some kind of maybe more comprehensive guidance as to what we believe is the right answer, not in a so long time frame. That would be my preference. But anything that would encourage change of practice at this moment, I think it's not the right thing to do because we haven't discussed. We don't really know what constituents should do. And anything along what Guido says, I believe, would encourage changes to the current practice. If I understand the current practice being limited to AA corporate bonds, then it will say it will encourage at least a change before we can discuss this issue at length. And it's a very, very significant issue. I repeat it, this is the most significant issue we have had for quite a while in terms of impact on the financial statement of the reporting entity. So anything we can do to say, let's keep it the way it is, and we'll come back with what we believe is the right answer very soon, would be my preference.
Lawrence, Andrew, Guido, and Scott. No, Scott hadn't been in yet, so Lawrence, Scott, Andrew, whatever.
So I am aware of ESMA's statement that ESMA says that entities should not change their approach to determining discount rate as long as IFRIC has not clarified high-quality corporate bond meaning. My question to Fabienne would be, ESMA is making that statement. Now, how confident are we that regulators within the European Union are going to enforce that statement? I know in my jurisdiction, I think it's going to be enforced. I'm not so confident about other jurisdictions. So, and as John or Jean highlighted, so this deals with this. Possibly deals with Europe, and I'm not even sure of that. What about the rest of the world? And if Europe enforces it, is it fair then that in other parts of the world they change and European companies cannot change because of regulators? So I see a problem. So in effect, I'm starting to think, aren't we already too late for the Europeans? Is there anything we can do today to stop a change? First, do we want to stop a change? That's the first question. Compared of prior practices, and can we avoid the thing to happen? Because as soon as it leaks somewhere around the world. I can tell you it leaks everywhere.
Scott?
I think that there is nothing we can do today that will not have the effect of encouraging diversity. We don't have the time to do something that will narrow or discourage diversity. So unless ESMA is telling us they need something, my preference would be to continue thinking about this before doing anything. On some of these other issues, my initial inclination was that these kinds of changes were changes in policy as opposed to changes in estimates. I also note regarding this risk thing, there's a long discussion in BC 132 to 134 of IAS 19 that ends with IASC had not identified clear evidence that the expected return on an appropriate portfolio of assets provides a relevant and reliable indication of the risks associated with the defined benefit obligation. Consequently, IASC decided that the discount rate should reflect the time value of money but should not attempt to capture those risks. So that was my leaning, that we were headed towards a risk-free rate, not a rate that encompasses anything else. But I think we would not be able to agree on some language that emphasizes that today. So I think we need longer to deal with it. I think all we should issue from today's meeting is note that we discussed it and we understand this is a serious issue and we will think about it more.
Andrew?
It would be nice to know if we don't do anything that ESMA regards what it's put out as an instruction not to change. Because if it's just recommendation or interesting thoughts, it's not going to have the desired effect. If it's an instruction for people not to change until IFRIC sorted it out, then that kind of helps. And I'm not quite sure exactly what it is.
I'm not sure that's a fair question to ask Fabian.
No answer is also.
I think it's on the order of a rhetorical question.
As a regulator, nobody cared if the question was fair. Yes, that's right.
Guido?
Probably we are not going to get an answer from Fabian. I thought that she would help us out there. I'm just saying that with the staff paper and nothing, we are not going to decide anything. The floodgates are open. We as auditors will not be able to qualify our opinion. We can deal with it next year, but then the whole story is gone already. And I appreciate ESMA saying, well, we have something in there. If you go to our website and there's one sentence saying, well, you should keep it, or it doesn't help a lot. It doesn't help at all, actually. So at least I think we should, if we could come to a conclusion here, I see that there is divergence in views whether it's change in accounting estimate or not. If we could conclude at least on that, that we have some disclosure in there. Otherwise, I understand that this is a huge issue. It has been, and that we need to think about it more thoroughly. I totally agree on that. So it's not the end of the thinking that we put something in there and say, well, you should think about it and put some disclosure in there. I agree with that. But I'm telling you, if we just going out like this and say, well, there's something that ESMA says, it would be good for the corporate balance sheets, though. We have much higher equity ratios in the next year.
Okay, Bernd and then Kaz, and then I'm going to try another proposal.
Well, I agree with Guido in terms of if we do nothing and there's no guidance whatsoever and the auditors can't stop diversity, then it's better to have at least something that says, well, but you have to follow these disclosure requirements so that the users know what the companies are doing instead of doing nothing, and as you said, the floodgates are open. And when it comes to fairness, I think when ESMA puts out in early November a paper saying we recommend companies doing nothing unless the interpretations committee issues something, knowing that this is the last meeting this year, and if we start discussing something this year, that there will not be anything out there before next May, probably, from us officially, because we have to have the due process. So I'm not sure that maybe they wanted us to do something in the rejection note. Otherwise, why should they do this? Why should they ask in November to wait for the interpretations committee to do something? Or they didn't think about the timeline themselves. So I'd rather support Guido's approach to say, well, we have a tentative agenda, a rejection, saying at least disclose what you're doing.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, that's a disclosure that, whether we call it a policy or an estimate, already has to be made, a with and without disclosure, before and after. And so, Cass, before you other guys come in, the agenda decision that you're proposing would say only that we're aware of this issue, we're thinking about it. In the interim, we remind everybody that you have this disclosure requirement you have to meet. That's consistent with Scott's view that there's nothing we can do to keep the floodgates closed anyway, so we might as well make sure everybody knows how deep the water is, to keep the metaphor open. Cass?
Well, I don't think it's a big issue currently in Asia market, rather than compared to Europe. But I prefer just to consider maybe take more time to understand the consequences. But understanding the discussion and then knowing the agenda decision or notes we are disclosing. From preparer's perspective, if we have such a kind of risk, maybe we have a big impact, and I wouldn't change currently, knowing that ESMA is saying that, and we are going to go less risk-free rate. That would be the direction. Understanding that, from preparer's perspective, we wouldn't change. So I think that's a problem that I thought normal corporate finance person's thinking. That might be wrong, but I thought that might be helpful.
Scott, last word.
Maybe I'm being pessimistic, but I think even an agenda decision that says if you make a change, don't forget about these disclosures, will be read by some as saying, oh, IFRIC believes we can change.
Yeah.
So definitely I'm being pessimistic, but maybe warranted.
Okay, we got two choices. Choice one is the Guido proposal, which I'm going to describe, and Guido, if I get it wrong, you correct me. Guido's proposal is we issue a very short agenda decision that says we're aware of the problem, we're working on it, and in the interim, remember the disclosure requirements around changes in estimates and or policies.
Maybe, I don't know, looking at what the standard talks about high quality corporate bonds, that we would say, please take into account that the change in the estimate when looking at investment or credit default risk, we would not expect it to deviate too much from your estimates that you did before. Because that was the issue. I mean, some people around this table said, well, investment risk, it's probably risk-free rate. So everybody is concerned about taking into consideration corporate bonds that have a significant default or investment risk. So pointing that out and saying, well, you know, please be aware that this is an issue and we're talking about high quality here, so you cannot go out there and take double B or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying we should mention double B, but just pointing out that please be cautious when you're doing this new estimate when it comes to investment and credit default risk, because that's, I think, what Cass has said. If companies are making the change, we should at least tell them, be cautious. We are looking especially at this investment risk and credit risk. So this is an issue that you should take into consideration when you make, if you make the change in estimate.
Let me put it in different words, and then you tell me if I understood you. Essentially, what you're saying is, however you thought about what the words high quality meant last year, it hasn't changed. High hasn't gotten low. So whatever you thought high quality was last year, and this is why I'm inclined to say it's a policy change, but let's not have that argument. Whatever you thought the words meant last year, they mean the same thing now, is essentially what you're saying. And so,
or at least they don't mean something a whole lot different now.
A whole lot different.
Okay, we're going to need to work on the wording. The alternative is do nothing. And the concern I've heard expressed about either of those is that the flood's already here. So, the GITA proposal, subject to staff drafting that we can't get done in the next hour, who would support that? And the do nothing? Okay. The will of the committee is that we pursue an agenda decision along the lines that Guido described, which would emphasize, just to be absolutely sure that these guys write down what you think we said. Number one, there is no reason to believe that there is a significant difference between what high quality meant last year and what it means this year. And number two, remember the disclosure requirements that you have to meet regarding, and I'd like to just mention both policy and estimate so we don't foreclose either. Don't forget the disclosure requirements in IAS 8, so it's going to be a pretty short agenda decision. And obviously, then we have to keep working on this one.
But there's the fact that I think it's paragraph 122 of IAS 1 that implies that you must describe how you determine your discomfort.
Okay. We can also refer to that. Okay, thanks, gang.
Do I understand, Wayne, that we will hint that we're continuing to work?
Oh, yeah, we won't hint. We'll tell people.
Because that could be a big detriment to changing, you know, down and then.
Okay. We have Denise's revised wording, but I'm not going to ask you to respond to it immediately. Let's get it around to everybody, and we'll make that the last thing we talk about today.